Welcome to another episode of Ellen and Overy's podcast series, where we discuss arbitration and its potential for resolving intellectual property disputes. My name is Melody Chan. I am a partner in A&O's arbitration practice based in Hong Kong. Joining me today is James Fox, who is a senior associate in A&O's IP litigation team in London.
Thanks for having me, Melody. I'm looking forward to our discussion.
Thanks, James. In previous episodes, we have discussed arbitration more generally and its suitability for resolving IP disputes. Today, we are going to talk about a particular type of IP disputes and the possible advantages that arbitration offers to parties over national litigation. Those disputes are friend disputes. So what is friend? FRAND stands for Fair, Reasonable, and Non-Discriminatory, and many of our listeners will be very familiar with FRAND disputes. But those who are less familiar or who would like a refresher, would you please explain, James, what FRAND means in a broader sense?
Of course. Not everybody has lived and breathed FRAND quite as much as I have over the last few years. So first of all, to understand FRAND, you need to understand standardization. So the key principle behind standardization is ensuring interoperability between component parts of a complex machine or network. So to take the example of the telecoms world, which is the sector where most FRAND disputes have arisen so far, you may have one user, an individual, calling from a Huawei handset, which incorporates a high silicon chip in China on China telecom network. And they want to speak with another user who's in the UK, who's using an Apple handset, which incorporates a Qualcomm chip on the EE network. All of that's being routed through masts and network equipment produced by other players like Ericsson and Nokia and others. So there's a great many players in the market, and to ensure that all of the different parts in that scenario, whether they're chipset manufacturers, handset manufacturers, network equipment manufacturers, network operators, they all make individual components, and you need to make sure that they can all talk to and understand each other and thereby make the system as good and workable as it can be. So that's the goal of standardization.
That is very interesting. But how does that lead to disputes?
Well, the problems come about because it's in the best interests of those who are defining the standard, which is essentially just a rule book for how you have to make individual components. It's in the best interest of those people to include the most up-to-date technology available to ensure the system is as good and cutting-edge as it can be and to deliver the best product to the consumer. And that cutting-edge technology comes from companies, industry players like Huawei and Qualcomm in my previous example, who volunteer it or opt it into the standard. They'll have come up with those inventions, that technology themselves, and they incorporate it into the standard. But because that's their cutting-edge R&D work product, it's usually patent-protected.
I can see that if the standard incorporates a lot of patent-protected technologies, then that could lead to difficulties.
Exactly. It means that working the standard, so making a 5G-compliant phone, for example, necessarily requires you to work and therefore to infringe those patents, which we call standard essential patents, or SEPs or SEPs. And this causes IP issues because the normal remedy for patent infringement is an injunction. But of course, in the context of a SEP, that would cause carnage because any patentee holding a single SEP could demand whatever price it wanted, and if people refused to pay, it could get an injunction which would essentially bring down the whole network. And there are thousands of SEPs that make up each of the 4G and the 5G universes. Anyone holding a single one could demand whatever price it wanted, and if people refused to pay, it could get an injunction which would essentially bring down the whole network. So the standard setting bodies require that companies which are opting their patents into the standard to make a contractual commitment to offer a license to any entity which needs one. And that license has to be on fair, reasonable, and non-discriminatory, or FRAND, terms. And that means that everyone is able to work the standard and that the patent holder is reimbursed for the use of its technology at a fair level, but it's not able to extort the industry or to hold it to ransom. That's the theory anyway, but often parties don't agree on what the frand price is.
So it sounds like these disputes are essentially disputes about valuation and how much an implementer should be paying for access to a patent holder's portfolio. When the parties cannot come to an agreement, then a court or tribunal is needed to intervene to determine what the frand rate is in those circumstances. Is that right?
Exactly. That is a frand dispute in a nutshell.
So how have national courts dealt with these disputes to date?
So for many years, SEPs were litigated in a country-by-country way. So you'd have to bring an action in multiple jurisdictions in parallel. And that all changed in 2017 when the UK High Court determined a global frand rate for a portfolio in the Unwired Planet case. And so in that case, the High Court had a lengthy trial, reviewed a whole series of comparable licenses, and it heard extensive expert evidence on the valuation of the Unwired Planet portfolio. And in the end, it set a frand rate that Huawei was required to pay for access to the portfolio. It actually set the number. And if Huawei did not agree to pay that rate, then the court said it would issue an injunction, which would effectively prevent Huawei's handsets from operating in the UK. And that was really pivotal because it was the first time that any court or anywhere in the world had actually determined a frand rate without both parties positively agreeing to it and asking the court to do that. And it proved fairly controversial. It was appealed all the way up to the Supreme Court, and we acted for Huawei in the Supreme Court appeal. But since then, the Chinese court has said that it will determine a global frand rate, and other courts, such as the US, have done the same if the parties have agreed. But differences in approach between national jurisdictions have given rise to forum shopping and lots of anti-suit and anti-anti-suit injunctions. So it has become quite complicated.
I understand. So it sounds as though there are complexities with national frand litigation. What benefits do you think arbitration can offer to parties looking for a way to resolve their frand disputes?
I think a significant benefit that arbitration offers is that it can resolve the jurisdictional issues that are giving rise to one of these anti-suit and anti-anti-suit injunctions. And it can determine a global frand rate without the need to commence multiple national litigations. So the Court of Appeal in England and Wales has recently explicitly called for a move away from using national courts to determine SEP and frand disputes. I brought a copy of the judgment here with me because I think that it will be, I'm going to read you an extract from Lord Justice Arnold, who will say it much more clearly than I can, just summarizing the problem that, as he sees it, with national frand litigation. So he says, "In the absence of a negotiated agreement between a patentee and an implementer as to the terms of a frand license, which may be facilitated but cannot be guaranteed by mediation, a dispute resolution system is required to resolve disputes. The IPR policies of standards bodies such as ETSI do not provide for any international tribunal to determine such disputes. And it follows that in the absence of an agreement to arbitrate, the only dispute resolution systems available to such parties are the national courts competent to adjudicate upon patent disputes." And then he goes on, "These appeals illustrate yet again the dysfunctional state of the current system for determining SEP-FRAND disputes. Each side has adopted its position in an attempt to game the system in its favour, and the only way to put a stop to such behaviour is for SDOs like ETSI to make legally enforceable arbitration of such disputes part of their IPR policies." So I think the standards bodies are very unlikely to adopt such a system, but I thought the quote was quite revealing because essentially the judge's view, a very senior IP judge who's experienced in this area from the UK, his view is that arbitration will resolve many of the problems.
I can understand the jurisdictional issues and I can see why the parties agreeing to an arbitration would resolve those. But if the parties did agree to arbitrate a frand dispute, how would it actually work in practice?
I think that arbitration could offer some practical advantages as well, because frand disputes are often criticised for the fact that the parties' arguments and evidence pass like ships in the night, and they don't directly address and respond to each other, because parties will take very different approaches to valuation, because obviously they're trying to justify different numbers. And Mr. Justice Mellor said in a recent UK decision between InterDigital and Lenovo. He said that these cases needed significantly more active case management. And I think that's perfect for arbitration, because arbitrators have much more time to case manage, to hear interim applications, and to ensure the case is properly prepared for trial, because they don't have the same restrictions on their time that national judges have.
So based on what we have discussed already, I suppose that the ability for the parties to select tribunal members and form the panel in the way that they want could be a real advantage too.
Definitely. Yes. The parties could select arbitrators with particular expertise which is suitable for a FRAND hearing. So that might be technical expertise in the relevant area of standardization, or it could be accountancy or finance expertise, or licensing experience. So that ability to select for non-legal expertise is a benefit in such a commercial type of dispute. And I think that benefit is multiplied by the fact that you can choose a whole panel to combine multiple areas of expertise, which a single person could never have. And as we've discussed, different jurisdictions, national jurisdictions, have evolved different traditions and approaches to FRAND valuation. So if you have a preference, you can select your arbitrators accordingly and tailor your arbitration to work however you want.
That certainly makes sense, and it is an element of choice and the ability to tailor the proceedings in ways that doesn't exist if you're litigating before a national court. There, the most you have is the choice of venue, and that is only you have that choice if you are a claimant. Are there any other benefits you can think of which make arbitration an interesting option for FRAND disputes?
Yes, there's another big one that I haven't mentioned yet, and that's confidentiality. Because at their heart, FRAND disputes deal with some of the most commercially sensitive information that parties hold. They address the financial and non-financial licensing terms which underpin the entirety of both parties' businesses. And parties, for that reason, are typically very sensitive about this. And so stringent confidentiality protections are put in place in these cases to try to prevent commercially valuable confidential material from leaking out into the public. But there are limits on how far that confidentiality protection can stretch. So in the UK, for example, all hearings are held in public unless there's a very strong reason why they shouldn't be. And the judges have an obligation to publish their judgments, including sufficient information to allow the public to understand the judgment when they read it. So the principle of open justice runs into direct conflict with the party's interests in keeping the details of the dispute confidential. And arbitration, I think, provides a good advantage for parties here, because an arbitral tribunal has no duty to ensure open justice at all. They can keep everything completely confidential. So neither the hearing in an arbitration nor the judgment needs to be made public. And it doesn't even need to be public that there are proceedings ongoing at all. So that could be very attractive to parties, I think.
I agree. And we've talked about a couple of pros. Do you see any challenges, though, which may limit arbitration's usefulness in the context of FRAND disputes?
I think there are two challenges that come to mind for me. The first is consent. So one party cannot force the other party to submit to an arbitration, whereas they can unilaterally commence litigation in a national court. So there would need to be agreement between the parties, not only on the fact of resolving the dispute by arbitration, but also on questions such as the venue, the rules to apply, the procedure that would be followed, that sort of thing. So I think this might be difficult to achieve by parties who are, if they find themselves in this position, quite clearly at loggerheads and struggling to come to an agreement anyway. However, many of these SEP disputes only arise after years of negotiations. So there are clearly channels of communication open and an ongoing dialogue happening between the parties. So in the right circumstances, I think this could certainly be overcome. And the second concerns access to documents. So a key part of most FRAND disputes is reviewing comparable licenses, which are license agreements that one of the parties to the proceedings has signed with other third parties. And they're used as a sort of proxy for valuing the portfolio that we're looking at in the case. And the issue is that these documents contain confidential information which belong to third parties who are not subject to the proceedings. And they're protected by confidentiality provisions which don't necessarily allow for them to be disclosed into arbitration proceedings. A national court has the power to override those sorts of provisions, but an arbitral tribunal does not. So there are ways of dealing with this, both by obtaining consent and by other legal means. But that's something for parties to bear in mind, and I think definitely something to come and discuss with us if that's something that they're considering.
The importance of lawyers, right?
Exactly.
Well, James, I'm afraid that brings us to the end of this episode, and thank you for this insightful session. I, for one, have definitely learned a lot about Fran. To our audience, this was the final episode in our IP arbitration podcast series, and would encourage you to take a look at the other episodes featured on our website. If you have any ideas or topics that you would like us to cover, feel free to drop us an email and share with us your thoughts and comments. Thank you.